November 18, 2019. It was minutes before dawn in Batavia, Illinois, a suburb outside Chicago. Inside the Fermilab Physics Laboratory, two astronomers watched live footage from a telescope at the Cerro Tololo Inter-American Observatory, which was positioned on a Chilean mountaintop some 8,000 miles away.
Clara Martinez-Vasquez and Cliff Johnson had pulled an all-nighter to observe the Magellanic Clouds, two wispy dwarf galaxies that orbit the Milky Way. With the sun just beneath the horizon, this was their prime viewing hour.
Suddenly, 19 bright streaks of light appeared in the foreground, overlapping the dwarf galaxies. The two astronomers stared at the screen in shock.
The sharp lines remained for the course of 5 minutes before disappearing. Johnson would later say, 19 streaks across a single exposure is pretty incredible. That's got to be some kind of record.
But this was no galactic miracle. It was completely man-made.
Just 1 week earlier, multi-billionaire Elon Musk had launched 60 new Starlink satellites into suborbital space. They're part of his initiative to provide worldwide internet under the larger umbrella of his ambitious space company, SpaceX.
At 500 pounds, each satellite is roughly the size of a kitchen table. 19 of them obscured the view that night in 2019. Having perfectly caught the glare of the rising sun. But this number is minuscule compared to how many satellites SpaceX still plans to launch.
As of January 2020, the Federal Communications Commission has approved the launch of 12,000 satellites. And if they play their cards right, the private space company is hoping to launch around 30,000 more.
The night sky as we know it could become a swarm of artificial lights.
This is The Dark Side Of, a Parcast original, a show where we will delve into the seedy underbelly of pop culture icons and historical events.
We aim to expose the ugly truth behind cultural moments and public figures we hold most dear, proving that there is always more to the story than meets the eye. I'm your host, Richard.
And I'm Kate. This is our eighth episode on the dark side of space. While the quest to put a man on the moon and explore the great beyond has always been a trophy on the shelves of U.S. history, we're digging just a little deeper into what really happened to get there.
At Parcast, we're grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network.
You can find all episodes of The Dark Side Of and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream The Dark Side Of for free on Spotify, just open the app, tap Browse, and type The Dark Side Of in the search bar.
Last week, we learned about the environmental hazards of space travel and how rocket emissions, space junk, and intergalactic mining pose a threat to life on Earth.
This week, we'll be exploring new space, the industry created by billionaire corporations to monetize the Milky Way. We'll learn about the length some companies go to just to advertise in space and the recent progress in space tourism, a newfangled vacation for the wealthy elite.
We'll also look at proposals for space colonization and manufacturing in space, probing deeper into what motivations underpin private space efforts.
The 1960s space race ushered in a longer and more irreversible era, the space age.
This epoch was controlled at first solely by the government. As such, NASA's achievements were regarded as national milestones, which was fair considering that Project Apollo alone cost taxpayers over $283 billion in today's dollars. Yet despite this obligatory participation, America's public sector, and not private industry, clutched the keys to space.
The NASA trend continued into the beginning of the 21st century. Meanwhile, in 1984, a significant event took place.
That year, Congress enacted the Commercial Space Launch Act, which was a drastic change in U.S. space policy. It set in motion the ability of private companies to develop space technology and travel completely independent of the government.
It was a shrewd move. Already, NASA relied on tens of thousands of contractors to support the development and execution of its missions. Now, the private sector could play a prominent hand in advancing America's technology and exploring space, essentially helping to pay the bills for new U.S. accomplishments.
The ramifications of this policy wouldn't be felt until the turn of the century with the founding of major private spaceflight companies. But the seeds of these ventures were already being planted.
As the year 2000 approached, the dot-com bubble was rapidly bloating. Bill Gates and Paul Allen of Microsoft were established celebrities, and the World Wide Web was becoming the foundation of new and exciting tech enterprises, including Amazon.com, founded by Jeff Bezos in 94, and PayPal, co-founded by Elon Musk in 98.
Bezos and Musk were relative newcomers to Silicon Valley, a growing region for entrepreneurs just south of San Francisco, California. But in just a few more years, their underlying interests in private space technology would be making industry headlines.
In the meantime, space retained its allure to the American public, as evidenced by films like Star Wars and Back to the Future. It also reared its mystical head via the stream of space-themed advertisements during the 1980s and 90s.
This was likely due to the fascination surrounding NASA's space shuttle missions. And while most advertisers wove their fairy tales using a green screen, some were the real deal.
In 1984, Coca-Cola proposed taking a can of their classic soda on a space shuttle flight. When Pepsi caught wind, they submitted their own rival beverage.
Each company devised a can that would allow for microgravity enjoyment, including special valves. Supposedly, Coca-Cola paid $250,000 for their design, while Pepsi claims to have spent a whopping $14 million on their version. Calculating for inflation, that's worth almost $35 million in 2020.
Whether this cash was worth it or not, it's hard to tell. Both contraptions flew aboard the Space Shuttle Challenger in 1985, but NASA was quick to clarify that the project was an engineering experiment and not any kind of brand endorsement or advertisement.
It was a suspicious claim, considering that both soda companies were clearly in it for the public exposure.
In 1993, the U.S. government was much less flexible when American company Space Marketing, Inc. made an outlandish request.
The firm wanted to launch a giant space billboard into the ether. This signage would have measured 1 square kilometer, over a half mile. Luckily, it was sidelined as obtrusive space advertising.
But plenty of wealthy brands have still made it to space, and almost all of them can thank Russia. In 1997, an Israeli milk company called Tanuva paid for the first live television commercial filmed in space. Audiences watched as cosmonaut Vasily Tsubliev swallowed floating bubbles of milk aboard Russia's Mir spacecraft.
And in 2000, America's beloved Pizza Hut chain paid $1 million to put a 30-foot logo on a Russian Proton rocket headed to the International Space Station.
While Russia has time and again taken cash from cheesy space advertisers, NASA, as a government agency, is restricted by law from appearing to endorse brands. The 1984 soda experiment, of course, being a questionable anomaly.
The agency has even gone so far as to carefully dub the M&Ms aboard its spacecraft candy-coated chocolates.
These steadfast rules against endorsement remain in place, for now. But that doesn't mean NASA hasn't created new avenues for commercial profit, seeking creative ways to take in private money.
For example, in February of 2020, the agency awarded a $140 million contract to Axiom Space, their primary manufacturer for the International Space Station. The result will be at least one commercial space module attached to the ISS, which NASA can then rent to private companies for their own research or whatever suits their fancy.
It's a huge step for the agency, but these sorts of headlines aren't what catch the public eye anymore. In today's heavily branded world, it's only the most excessive space initiatives that attract attention, partly because of the larger-than-life names behind them.
New Space is the name for these billionaire-backed private companies, including Jeff Bezos's Blue Origin, Elon Musk's SpaceX, and Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic, among many others.
These commercial ventures spawned at the turn of the century precisely because of pre-existing tech boom empires. In Bezos's case, Amazon, and in Musk's case, PayPal and the 2003 founding of Tesla, which came to fruition a bit faster than SpaceX.
They claim their private space ventures are the culmination of their previous enterprises, recognizing an immense potential with space technology and travel. And as with any burgeoning industry, each player is desperate to one-up the rest in both technology and travel.
Some like to brush this off as rich men gambling with their money, but it's not without far-reaching consequences. As we learned in the last episode, increased rocket missions could spell catastrophe for both upper and lower orbit atmospheres. And as space travel becomes more and more frequent, all of civilization will be unwittingly dragged along for the ride.
It's like the space race all over again, but without any defined end goal. Average citizens are being told to simply buckle up and hang on.
Meanwhile, NASA is more than happy to rely on the research and creations of new space companies, essentially piggybacking off the advancements and the publicity of these new efforts. In fact, the agency has already commissioned two partners, SpaceX and Boeing, to shuttle NASA's crews to and from the ISS.
SpaceX has already tested its Falcon 9 rocket and the safety of its Crew Dragon capsule for NASA's Commercial Crew program. At the time this episode was written, the company plans to launch its next manned demo on May 27, 2020. And Boeing is trailing close behind with its own Space Launch System rocket and Starliner capsule.
Each craft will be able to fly up to 7 passengers to and from orbit, including astronauts, commercial scientists, and space tourists.
That's right. For $35,000, you can spend a night aboard the International Space Station, sleeping bag included.
One could argue that civilians are finally benefiting from NASA's hitherto remote achievements, but the hefty price tag is still out of reach for the everyday taxpayer, and it doesn't even cover your round trip to the galactic sleepover.
NASA's chief financial officer, Jeff DeWitt, estimates this airfare at $50 million per person.
The final pricing will depend on SpaceX and Boeing.
This is not the first time space tourism has been a topic. During the Apollo era, now-defunct airline Pan Am offered a waitlist for the moon. They racked up 90,000 names by 1971, including Senator Barry Goldwater, CBS News anchor Walter Cronkite, and the future president Ronald Reagan. But the tickets were never sold.
NASA's space shuttle era also hoped to see a rise in self-funded tourists. The goal was that reusable shuttles would ease costs. Of course, this fell by the wayside after two fatal missions, the Challenger in 1986 and Columbia in 2003. Not to mention that the early designs for a reusable spacecraft ultimately cost NASA more money than it saved.
Nonetheless, space tourism never lost its consumer appeal. And the seeds that Pan Am had planted are, for better or worse, finally coming to fruition. Thanks to new space companies, space tourism has seen a resurgence in the last 20 years.
Forget the Bahamas. For the most jaded globetrotters, space is truly the final frontier, the ultimate destination. You just might not be able to afford it.
American engineer Eric C. Anderson founded Space Adventures in 1998. It was the first private spaceflight venture and something of a cosmic travel agent for people with enough dough to vacation in space.
In 2001, the company launched its first customer, 60-year-old Denis Tito, via a Russian Soyuz TM-32 rocket. Space Adventures had partnered with Russia's space program to make Tito's dreams of visiting the International Space Station come true, all for the reputed sum of $20 million.
This made Tito the world's first space tourist, but the California millionaire prefers a more sophisticated title, independent researcher.
Software CEO Mark Shuttleworth followed Tito's lead. After his 2002 flight with Space Adventures, Shuttleworth eschewed the term tourist, instead regarding himself as a pioneer of commercial space travel. And millionaire engineer Anousheh Ansari, a 2006 client, calls herself a private space explorer.
Fussing over your official title after a million-dollar spaceflight is a luxury few will ever afford. And yet, the market continues to boom, with billionaire space zealots hoping to sell more and more tickets.
On the one hand, at least taxpayers aren't paying as much out of pocket for recent space developments as they did, say, during the space race. But the trade-off is that we have less say than ever about what goes on there.
Meanwhile, the new space competition is just getting started.
Up next, SpaceX and Blue Origin duke it out for a piece of NASA history.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Now, back to the story.
For years, government agencies like NASA held the keys to space. Private companies could only capitalize on the fairy tale via green screen advertisements or bribe Russia's space program to tout their products in orbit. But now, the private sector is taking center stage as commercial spaceflight companies seek to capitalize on the vast opportunities of the new space era.
These technological advancements mark an exciting time for space enthusiasts. However, many argue that some very necessary guardrails are missing.
In 2004, a spacecraft known as the Spaceship One reached the edge of space, securing the $10 million Ansari X Prize for being the very first privately funded and reusable craft.
The award went to new space company Mojave Aerospace Ventures, the brainchild of Microsoft co-founder and billionaire Paul Allen. But despite this trophy, Allen knew the Spaceship One was incredibly dangerous.
On one 2003 mission, a pilot had to fly blind after his navigation system went wonky. During another in 2004, the spacecraft spun all the way from the ground into space. A nauseating ordeal.
It was during that time that NASA's Space Shuttle Columbia broke apart, an event that weighed heavy on the American public. Not wanting such risks, Allen quickly sold the rights for Spaceship One over to Richard Branson, the multi-billionaire co-founder of the Virgin Group empire. But not before some eyebrows were raised.
That same year, in 2004, many Capitol Hill politicians expressed concern over the unsupervised private space industry. Former Minnesota Congressman James Oberstar lobbied especially hard. He wanted the Federal Aviation Administration to put the same safety regulations on space industries as exist for airlines. He said the FAA had a tombstone mentality. Wait until someone dies, then regulate.
Instead, the FAA and new space industry teamed up and pushed back. Even today, all a space company has to do to get their FAA license is to create a ground plan protecting people and property that could be damaged in a crash event.
For those willing to take the risk, going to space is akin to skydiving. Nobody's at fault if you die, except for you.
Meanwhile, Spaceship One morphed into a more glamorous version of its former self under the auspices of Richard Branson's private space company, Virgin Galactic.
Spaceship Two is the name of Virgin's fleet of ambitious blue and white space planes, which accommodate up to 6 passengers at a time. They're carried to launch altitude via an aircraft escort dubbed the White Knight 2.
Eventually, Spaceship 2 is released and jettisons onward to suborbital altitude, in this case, about 50 or 55 miles above Earth. There, paying customers can experience 5 minutes of weightlessness and the overview effect, that sense of awe and smallness that comes from seeing how tiny the world is.
But for many people, the cost to get there doesn't seem so minuscule. Tickets cost $250,000 for the 90-minute flight, a dream that only the very rich can afford.
In February 2019, Virgin successfully launched the first test passenger, their very own chief astronaut instructor, Beth Moses, into suborbit. And as of late 2019, 603 starry-eyed clients have paid their $250,000 fee for this adventure, including celebrities like Katy Perry and Brad Pitt.
Some view it as their chance to finally experience what NASA's astronauts have witnessed for decades. Florida resident Marianne Berry is one such ticket holder. She says, "It's my turn, and I'm going. I do want to see what the Earth looks like from space. I want to have that overview effect experience."
Virgin Galactic is banking on marketing this sentiment alongside their first flights. They hope to fly 66 passengers in 2020, 700 in 2021, and by 2023, they hope to carry 1,562 passengers into suborbit, reaching an annual revenue of $600 million.
Branson also hopes to one day place a floating hotel into orbit. And as of 2018, Axiom, another private aerospace company, has designed a private luxury space hotel with renowned French architect and interior designer Philippe Starck.
For $55 million, elite customers could spend 8 days aboard the private space station with its tan suede interior and LED mood lighting. They can also count on wearing designer spacesuits, complete with drinking tube and diaper.
As wild as space tourism sounds, new space companies believe in its scalability. They're confident the initial momentum of wealthy clients will help cover development costs and spur on more flights at increasingly lower charges.
Virgin Galactic CEO George Whiteside says, "Globally, we think around 2 million people can experience this over the coming years at this price point. Over time, we'll be able to reduce that price point, and at that point, the market just explodes."
It's an ambitious profiteering scheme, and safety hazards aside, it bodes ill for the environment. As discussed in our last episode, repeat rocket missions could contribute to global warming, ocean pollution, and other environmentally destructive factors.
But one other new space competitor has a rose-colored perspective, though it's decidedly post-apocalyptic.
Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon and world's richest person, believes that space travel is an absolute necessity for the future of mankind. He says, "We humans have to go to space if we are going to continue to have a thriving civilization. We have become big as a population, as a species, and this planet is relatively small. We see it in things like climate change and pollution and heavy industry. We are in the process of destroying this planet."
That's why he founded his private space company, Blue Origin, in 2000. Never mind that it, too, contributes to said climate change, pollution, and heavy industry.
The company is putting the finishing touches on New Glenn, a partially reusable launch vehicle capable of carrying astronauts and payloads into space.
In the meantime, Blue Origin is tweaking their New Shepard, a reusable rocket capable of carrying 6 space tourists into space for a 10-minute outsider's perspective of Earth. The first of these voyages inside the sleek black and blue capsule could happen sometime in 2020. And while ticket prices are pending, CEO Bob Smith says the first flights will cost passengers hundreds of thousands of dollars.
This sum may seem enough to bar most people from visiting space. But like its competitors, Blue Origin believes its initial flights will generate more interest, leading to more tickets sold at lower price points. The Disneyland model.
Bezos himself believes that the current cost of space travel is too high, and he claims that many people, quote, don't get to exercise their creativity in space.
This may sound vague and poetic, but it's not the first time space travel and creativity have been linked.
In January 2013, 44-year-old Japanese billionaire Yusaku Maezawa revealed his Dear Moon project, in which he hoped to fly himself and 6 to 8 other artists on a trip around Earth's nearest neighbor.
He has paid fellow billionaire Elon Musk's company, SpaceX, an undisclosed chunk of change for the mission, which will launch via SpaceX's new Starship craft.
The journey is slated to take place in 2023, but as of early 2020, Maezawa had already altered his plans.
His initial Dear Moon project has been renamed Full Moon Lovers. And instead of bringing creatives with him, Yusaku says he is looking for just one female companion. The website states, through serious one-on-one matchmaking, Maezawa looks to find his life partner.
That's a lot of pressure to put on a first date.
Meanwhile, Elon Musk's SpaceX is busy preparing for other expeditions. In early February 2020, a new partnership was announced with space tourism company Space Adventures. The goal is to allow up to 4 private passengers to embark on an orbital trip around the SpaceX Crew Dragon capsule.
The first journey could happen as early as 2021 and will undoubtedly cost tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. Either way, it's a bizarre price to pay for spending 5 days inside a small room filled with strangers.
But as already evidenced by Virgin Galactic's 603 paying customers, the ultra-wealthy are willing to hemorrhage money on space, a sector which will only grow more accessible with practice and popularity.
In 2019, UBS Investment Bank estimated that the tourism sector of the space industry could reach a market value of $3 billion over the next decade. Sure, a nice benefit for both Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos, but it's only one aspect of all that they hope to accomplish. Above money for these two is victory. The two tech moguls are locked in a competition that spans back several years.
Blue Origin was founded in 2000, while SpaceX came along in 2002. 2 years later, in 2004, Bezos and Musk met for a friendly dinner. But apparently, the relationship was already strained. Musk would later say, "I actually did my best to give good advice," which he largely ignored.
Funny, considering that Bezos already had 2 years more experience at this point than Musk. But things really came to a head in 2013, when NASA granted SpaceX a 20-year exclusive lease of Launch Pad 39A.
This, of course, was the launch site of Apollo 11, the historic moon mission. NASA agreed that SpaceX could have it so long as the private company took over the roughly $100,000 a month in maintenance fees, a sliver of relief for American taxpayers.
But when Bezos caught wind of the agreement, he joined forces with United Launch Alliance, another private spaceflight company. Together, they filed a complaint against NASA, stating that they too wanted access to the launch pad.
In the end, Musk won out, calling the effort a phony blocking tactic. But a year later, in 2014, Bezos took him to task once more.
This time, Musk tried to patent the idea of landing spaceships on small islands. Bezos quickly pointed out that the notion has existed for a while. He even dug up old movie footage, proving that Hollywood had the dream long before Musk.
Since then, their spat has occasionally surfaced on Twitter, when the pair will trade barbs aimed at each other's rockets.
On the surface, it may seem like an egotistical show, but the drama is self-aware. Both Musk and Bezos are eager to drum up exposure and public interest in their developments. And they're going to need it if they want investors to continue buying into their outlandish ideas for space.
Satellite constellations, space colonization, and orbital factories are just a few of these questionable ideas.
Coming up, one billionaire unloads his prize-winning but dangerous rocket designs.
Now, back to the story.
The 21st century marked the birth of new space, another competitive era of space travel. But this time, it's corporations, not governments, who are spearheading the developments in space travel and technology. Each is hoping to capitalize on the vast opportunities of space, while little exists in the way of regulations to stop them.
While a wide variety of companies occupy the sector, two in particular, and their billionaire founders, have become the faces of new space: Elon Musk with SpaceX and Jeff Bezos with Blue Origin.
As the co-founder of PayPal and the founder of Tesla, Musk has quite a bit of experience with money-making ventures. And Bezos is the richest man in the world for creating Amazon, a platform with 112 million U.S. subscribers as of the end of 2019.
These early successes have allowed them to practice their dreams of developing space technology in the free market. But one could argue that both would be better off focusing on their primary businesses.
In 2017, workplace safety investigations revealed a high number of injuries taking place at Tesla's factories. Amidst the backlash, Elon Musk reached out to his employees, promising to meet with each injured person. But one former factory worker, Richard Ortiz, is calling his bluff.
Ortiz says that Musk never met with him following his own July 2017 injury, a sentiment echoed by many of his coworkers.
And Jeff Bezos isn't off the hook either. When the National Council for Occupational Safety and Health released its Dirty Dozen list of 2019 employers, Amazon had unsurprisingly made the list. Apparently, its fulfillment employees are obligated to use a scan gun that monitors their pace, essentially forcing them to work faster and faster to the point of exhaustion. Six U.S. Amazon workers died on the job just in the 5 months between November 2018 and April 2019.
Still, Musk and Bezos blaze past these failures to bigger and better initiatives, a mentality that smells eerily of the 60s space race, when Project Apollo took precedence over the civil rights movement. But it's a free market, and Bezos and Musk are especially at liberty with how to spend their money.
Bezos, for one, sells enough Amazon stock to pump $1 billion into Blue Origin each year. And while Musk isn't as personally loaded with cash as Bezos, he has already raised over $500 million in investments for SpaceX as of March 2020, bringing his company's overall value to around $36 billion.
This sort of backing is crucial to new space companies, and venture capitalists are banking on future space technology becoming a multi-trillion dollar market within the next two decades.
Carissa Christensen, founder and CEO of Bryce Space Technology, explains, "VCs are not investing in space because it's cool. VCs are investing in space because they see an opportunity for 10 times returns or 100 times returns in certain kinds of ventures."
One of these is satellites.
Satellite initiatives currently comprise 77% of the $360 billion space industry, a huge margin. SpaceX is one of many companies hoping to make a huge profit.
In March of 2020, Musk's company launched its sixth batch of satellites into space. It's all part of his ambitious Starlink project, an effort to create a so-called constellation of machinery to eventually provide worldwide internet.
SpaceX has already received approval from the Federal Communications Commission to launch a total of 12,000 satellites, and he hopes to launch around 30,000 more.
This would greatly outnumber the roughly 9,000 stars that are visible to the naked eye from Earth. And since the satellites will be flying very close to Earth for the sake of better reception, they will glare all the brighter.
Astronomers are already complaining that Starlink is interfering with their observations from Earth. Tony Tyson, an astronomer and physicist from the University of California, Davis, predicts that as time goes on, we will essentially see the sky moving. He says every square degree will have something crawling in it.
For many, this sounds like a dystopian future. But hungry new space companies aren't deterred by naysayers. Amazon plans to launch its own Kuiper constellation of about 3,200 initial satellites starting in 2026.
Undoubtedly, these will contribute to the vast amount of space debris and junk that pollutes Earth's orbit. And as we learned in our last episode, space junk could eventually be such a crash hazard that we would essentially be grounded from any more missions.
But this counterintuitive possibility matters little to Musk and Bezos, who both claim to be longtime science fiction fans, which is extremely believable considering the other outlandish plans they have for their companies.
Elon Musk, for one, hopes to one day colonize Mars based on what he perceives to be the Earth's inevitable demise. He says, "The sun is gradually expanding. In 500,000 million years, a billion at the outside, the oceans will boil and there will be no meaningful life on Earth. Maybe some very high-temperature bacteria, but nothing that can build rockets."
One could argue that there is still time to save Earth, which would include reining in potentially eco-hazardous industries like new space. Not to mention that Musk's 500,000 million years proposal is a very long time away. But to Musk, this is the impetus behind his current Starship venture. He has even expressed his personal hope of dying on Mars.
Jeff Bezos, on the other hand, thinks that colonizing other planets is a ridiculous idea. In 2016, he said, "We want to go to space to save the Earth. I don't like the plan B idea that we want to go into space so we have a backup planet."
This is why, in February of 2020, he initiated the Bezos Earth Fund, which pledges $10 million to fight climate change.
So Blue Origin is directly pledging to fight the climate effects that its new space travel is simultaneously exacerbating.
But ultimately, Bezos hopes he can have it both ways. He believes Earth could be saved by outsourcing life to artificial satellite planets, or space colonies, which he describes as very large structures, miles on end, and they hold a million people or more each.
Although Bezos has articulated very little on how to accomplish this, he does have one established idea.
Space manufacturing.
Imagine a floating metal factory, like something out of Guardians of the Galaxy or the Death Star from Star Wars. Now imagine it producing everything from heavy machinery to nuts and bolts.
While this future may sound bleak to many, to Bezos it's exciting. In 2019, he unveiled Blue Origin's very own lunar lander, Blue Moon. He hopes to use this design, along with his New Glenn rocket, to deliver payloads to the lunar surface, beginning as early as 2024.
Once there, Blue Origin would set up a base for mining the moon as well as asteroids, both ripe with mineral resources. These materials would then be sent to space factories, which would turn them into products for space colonies and the Earth.
The benefits to space manufacturing are multiple and complex, but it ultimately comes down to microgravity. Unlike Earth, where heavier elements tend to sink, space offers a chance to create stronger, more consistent alloys in much larger quantities. And overall, being above Earth allows for the literal space needed to test materials and increased opportunities to see how these could endure radiation and extreme temperatures.
But while these may seem like advantages, the question of necessity remains. Do we really need more materials than what already exist on Earth? And do we really want to bring back resources from foreign bodies like the moon or asteroids?
That's not to mention the process for obtaining these manufactured accords. Inevitably, they would be sent down to Earth, puncturing our ozone layer in the process and spewing emissions into the atmosphere.
But Bezos is exceedingly hopeful, believing that outsourcing our planet's factories will cut down on overall pollution and climate change. In his idyllic universe, Earth can be zoned residential.
Lest it seems like billionaires have lost their minds, one is still firmly against space. Bill Gates is the co-founder of Microsoft and was the richest person in the world until 2020 when Bezos passed him up. In a 2013 interview with Bloomberg Businessweek, Gates bluntly expressed his doubts about space.
He said, "In terms of improving the state of humanity, I don't see the direct connection. I guess it's fun because you shoot rockets up in the air, but it's not an area I'll be putting money into."
In 2019, the New York Times asked Gates once more about his interest in space, referencing Jeff Bezos.
Gates interrupted, saying, "He can have it."
It's a strident comment from someone whose former business partner, Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen, developed the first private reusable spacecraft. And for being a billionaire, Gates seems to be a rare breed these days.
Richard Branson is the billionaire founder of Virgin Galactic, who bought the intellectual property of Allen's spacecraft. While he is mostly known for his ventures in space tourism, Branson is ultimately setting his sights on hypersonic or point-to-point space travel.
Virgin has already received $20 million in investment support from another aerospace company, Boeing. Direct competitors will include SpaceX, with Elon Musk already hoping to develop his Starship rocket technology to offer transcontinental flights.
According to Musk's company, the usual 15-hour plane ride from New York to Shanghai would take a mere 39 minutes by rocket.
As discussed in previous episodes, rocket emissions account for far less pollution than regular airplanes. But rockets also require exponentially more fuel for propulsion.
Roughly 102,000 planes that fly every single day. Replacing these with rockets may spell disaster for global air quality, not to mention global warming.
And yet, new space forges ahead, relatively unchecked. Another notch in the belt for America and the bull market of technology.
Developing faster and better modes of space travel seems essentially self-interested, considering the greater crises that plague the Earth. But UBS Investment Bank expects that the broader space industry will double from its estimated $400 billion worth today into $805 billion by the year 2030.
In that time, what opportunities will be lost? What windows of time will close for our precarious environment? What grave milestones will be irreversible?
These are unpopular questions inside Silicon Valley and on the outside for excited onlookers. And admittedly, seeing what new things mankind is capable of achieving is an adrenaline rush.
But if we don't start asking the hard questions now, at some point, we will be confronted by answers that we might not like.
Want to hear more about what new space billionaires are planning? Join us next week as we look at the viability of deep space exploration and the dangers of life on Mars.
You can find more episodes of The Dark Side Of for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. Just open the app and type The Dark Side Of in the search bar.
And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. We'll see you next time.
The Dark Side Of was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler. Sound design by Brendan Hawkins, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Joshua Kern. This episode of The Dark Side Of was written by Ali Wicker, with writing assistance by Kate Gallagher, and stars Kate Leonard and Richard Rossner.